Welcome to episode 1469 of the 1010 Thrive podcast, brought to you by 1010 Thrive Ministries. 1010 Thrive, 10 minutes a day, based on 10 guidelines for abundant living. In the previous episode, Andrew reflected on the final days of Jesus' earthly ministry from the vantage point that had shaped his whole life, the edge. He remembered sitting with Peter, James, and John on the Mount of Olives as Jesus spoke about the destruction of the temple and the upheavals to come. He remembered the terrible gray uncertainty after the crucifixion, when everything familiar seemed to lose its shape. And then he watched the resurrection begin, not at the center of power, but at the margins. To Mary in a garden, to disciples on a road, to frightened followers behind a locked door. Andrew recognized the pattern immediately. Jesus had always been attentive to the overlooked, and now the greatest news in history was traveling inward from the edges. Acts of the Apostles, Part 4, Chapter 4.
After Pentecost, the world got larger. That is the simplest way to describe what happened. Before, the world was Galilee and Jerusalem and the road between them, with occasional excursions into the surrounding territories. After Pentecost, after the fire and the wind and the 3,000 and the community that gathered itself in Jerusalem around James, the world opened outward. Not for everyone at once, but the pressure was always outward, and eventually it pushed each of us beyond the borders we had known. Peter went to the cities of the coast and eventually to Rome. Paul went everywhere, with that particular energy of a man who has a great deal to make up for and knows it. Thomas went east, all the way to India. And I went north and northwest, into Scythia, along the Black Sea coast, into Greece, to Patras, where I am now, where, it appears, I will finish. But I want to tell you about the work before the finishing, because the work was the point.
And in the last days it shall be, God declares, that I will pour out my Spirit on all flesh, and your sons and your daughters shall prophesy, and your young men shall see visions, and your old men shall dream dreams. Even on my male servants and female servants in those days I will pour out my Spirit, and they shall prophesy.
I was there when Peter stood up and opened his mouth. I want to tell you what that was like from where I was standing, which was, characteristically, not at the front. I was in the crowd. I had been in the crowd for a few minutes before Peter rose, moving as I always moved, noticing what I always noticed, the people who were listening with a particular quality of attention, the ones who were leaning forward slightly, the ones whose faces suggested that something was landing that had been needed for a long time. Peter was extraordinary that morning. He had stood in a courtyard 6 weeks before and said three times that he did not know Jesus, whom he had followed for 3.5 years, and now he was standing in front of thousands of those same pilgrims and telling them exactly who the man was and what they had done to him and what God had done in response. I watched the crowd the way I always watch crowds, not the speaker. I knew what Peter was going to say, roughly, and I trusted him to say it. I watched the faces, and I saw the moment when the crowd shifted. Not all at once, not in a wave, but face by face, person by person, the message landing and doing what it was doing. People were asking, "What shall we do?" And Peter was answering. And 3,000 people were baptized. I was in the water for hours that day, not preaching, baptizing. The work at the edge of Peter's work, without which Peter's work had nowhere to go, that was Pentecost from where I was. I think back to that afternoon on the Mount of Olives. When the four of us asked him about the end of all things, he told us that before the end comes, the gospel must first be preached to all nations. All nations. Not just the sons of Abraham, not just the children of the covenant. The wild ones, the forgotten ones, the Greeks who came searching for him at the feast, the Gentiles who wander in the dark without a shepherd. When the Holy Spirit fell upon us like rushing wind, when those tongues of fire rested above our heads, I didn't just feel power, I felt a pulling. A tugging at my heart, like a fishing line cast deep into cold, uncharted waters. And, so when others stayed, I left. I want to tell you something about what years of traveling teach you, because it is not what I expected when I began. I expected to find strangers. People who were entirely unlike the people I had known. Different language, different customs, different gods, different everything. And in some respects, that is exactly what I found. I spent months in places where I could not yet speak the language, where every interaction required patience and improvisation, and the particular humility of a man who cannot yet say what he means and has to trust that meaning can still travel. What I did not expect was how quickly the strangers stopped being strangers. Not because they became like me, they did not. The Scythians did not start eating Galilean food or observing Jewish feast days or organizing their households the way a family in Bethsaida would. The surface stayed different, but underneath the surface, in the questions they asked, in the things they were afraid of, in the hungers that the work of ordinary life could not fully satisfy, they were recognizable. They were people at the edges of their own lives, looking for something they could not quite name. The same people I had been finding and bringing for 30 years. Just in different languages, in different clothes, under different skies, he had said, "Go and make disciples of all nations." I had always understood this as a geographical instruction. Go to all the places. What the road taught me was that it was also a theological one. All nations meant all people, and all people meant the same hunger underneath the cultural variation, and the same hunger meant the same answer was available to everyone. Not just to people who had grown up knowing what Isaiah said and how Passover worked. The door was wide. I had already understood this when Peter came back from Cornelius's house. The road confirmed it. City by city, port by port, face by face. I have never been a crowd preacher. I want to say that clearly, because I think there is sometimes an assumption that all the apostles operated the same way, standing up before thousands, declaiming, the Holy Spirit moving through a speech and transforming multitudes. That happened. At Pentecost it happened, and it happened other times and other places. Peter had the gift for it in a way that I have always recognized and genuinely admired. My work looked different. It looked small, lit by a lamp, someone's house. A handful of people who had heard something or seen something and had questions. And I would sit down with them. And I would answer the questions as well as I could. And I would watch for the person in the room who was almost ready, the one leaning forward, the one whose face said that the thing being described was the thing they had been looking for. And I would lean toward them, and I would bring them the rest of the way, one at a time. That is how most of the world was reached, in the end. Not by the great speeches at great moments, those matter, those are necessary, but by the countless small encounters in countless small rooms where someone noticed someone else and said, "Come, let me introduce you. There is someone you need to meet." I have been doing this for 30 years and I am not tired of it. That surprises me sometimes, when I think about it. The repetition of the work, the same questions, the same needs, the same human hunger underneath the different surfaces, should perhaps grow weary. It does not. Each person is the first time. Each finding is its own morning. I think this is because what I am bringing people to is inexhaustible. You cannot give away what is infinite and find yourself short. You cannot introduce the last person to the one who made them and run out of introduction. There is always another person at the edge. There is always more to give.
Andrew's story reminds us that not every calling looks like Peter at Pentecost. Some people preach to thousands. Others stand in the water for hours, baptizing the people who respond. Some carry the gospel across continents through public proclamation. Others carry it across a table, through a conversation, one person at a time. The kingdom needs both. There is something deeply hopeful in Andrew's discovery that strangers stop being strangers when we pay close enough attention. Language, culture, custom, and history may differ. But beneath those differences are familiar human questions. Am I known? Am I forgiven? Is there meaning beyond what I can see? Is there a God who can be trusted? Andrew learned that the gospel could cross every boundary because the hunger it answered was already there. Perhaps our own work is less complicated than we make it. We do not have to reach everyone at once. We only have to notice the person in front of us. The one leaning forward. The one asking the question beneath the question. The one standing at the edge. Andrew spent a lifetime discovering that there is always another person to bring closer to Christ, and that grace never diminishes by being shared. There is always more to give. To be continued.